It is Thursday, the 26th of June, and this is episode 213 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome along to another episode. Chris in the driving seat, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Hi, Chris.
I say driving seat because we're going to go on to Google Auto later, and very exciting it all is too. Yes, we've had Google I.O. Just yesterday was the keynote speech. So all the 6,000 sweaty developers all out in America all getting excited about Google stuff. So a lot of this podcast is dedicated to them and what they're talking about.
And they talked for ages.
Oh, they did. Yeah, they went into some depth. It wasn't a summary keynote as much as a real go into it. And I didn't mind that, but then I did nearly fall asleep at one point and therefore had to check out, and I haven't watched all of it yet.
No, there was at the 2 hour mark, they just went into some cloud nonsense, and even the most hardcore developer must have been like, Jesus Christ.
Just give me a save button, I'll use it.
Yeah.
So they started off, in Apple fashion with lots of figures and numbers, showing how many users they've got. And they've got an awful lot of users. Their current stats are based on 30-day active users. So they're talking about 30x all the time, 30x users, which means just in the last 30 days, who's been using their phone. So it's quite a good metric of actual active users rather than how many units that are out there that are now no longer in use. But they've come up with a design for a... It's kind of an OEM design, isn't it? So it's like they're telling users or telling manufacturers, this is how you build a Google phone that's nice, simple, cheap, and here are the parts you can put into it. But it's up to you to put them all together. But at the end of it, you'll have a nice phone. And they've called this Android One.
Yep. So this was all about the next billion, they tagged this as. And it looked
like an Android phone for $100.
Yeah. You know? And for a lot of people, you know, they probably don't need all the latest cutting edge hardware, even, and I'm including ourselves in that. If I look at how excited I get about the new iPhone coming out, and I know I'm going to buy one later this year, so remind me when I've bought one about this conversation. But you know,
yep,
you take a photo and you go, oh, that's really much better than the last one, and then you don't think about it ever again. You just
ever. No, that's the relentless onward movement of these sort of things. But yes, nice. Looked good, and I quite like the philosophy. They sort of showed the map of where they have penetration, where they don't, and you know they're aiming for the areas they don't have them.
And the two things are really liked, the apps auto install and the updates auto install. So it's just like,
yes,
just kind of, and I don't think it's even just because they talked about the next billion as in you know, it was always like third world countries and areas where they don't have a lot of penetration. But I think it's the kind of non-smart.
Hey,
yeah,
my dad's got a cheap phone, and if you offer him a smartphone or if you recommend him a smartphone for that much, yeah, go for it. Why not?
Yep.
Most of the keynote, the bits I got through anyway, were to do with what they're calling their L developer preview. So this is a brand new Android release, but it's much wider than that. It's kind of a platform release, isn't it, really? Because it covers everything from TVs to cars to your phone to desktop, so, and you know, browsing and their Chromebooks as well. So really it's a kind of unified approach to all of the devices that Android lives on, and it was interesting that Chromebooks got pulled into that as one, because up till now, you know, Chrome OS has been a separate thing really. But now it looks like it's all amalgamating into this one thing that they're calling the L developer preview. Something like 5,000 new APIs available, but they kind of talk through their philosophies behind everything, which is that's kind of the approach they took to their keynote, and they're very proud of their new design philosophy, and they called it Material. And this is effectively, they're using almost like a 3D effect on everything, and it's basically Material covers the fact that everything that comes onto screen comes on as a kind of a block that has edges, it has height on it, so it has shadowing and things like that. And basically it looks like the cards that they've got on Google now, but sort of applied everywhere, and everything has this kind of effect. And they had applied that to the phones and TVs and everything they covered on the day. And I quite liked it, because, and the reason I quite liked it was a bit like, I I've moaned at iPhone because it's got rid of all those definable objects, like a button. It's trying to, you know, pare back to just being a mark on the screen. Whereas this is kind of saying, this is something you can press. This is something you can move around. This is something that moves when you move. So I quite liked it. What did you think?
Looks-wise, I thought it was nice. And what was really quite impressive is just the... I've always felt Android kind of updates, like theme. They've always felt like a theme. That's the kind of right word for me. The new look, you know, so when they brought out, was it Holo or Holo, whatever, it, you know, that kind of look, it felt like they just put a skin on top. And even though they talked about they've made it buttery and we've done this and that, it still didn't feel like a kind of end-to-end, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Their core apps felt like they'd moved on, but then you've got so many subsidiary apps that just then look remarkably out of place.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And this looks like, you know, it's like top to bottom. This is like and I think the web address for it was it Google Design?
They've released a full style guide.
Yeah.
And probably in Google, you know, ways that they won't completely enforce it, or they won't be able to enforce it because it's an open platform, but they would like everyone to use that style guide to influence their design. And I think people will, because I think it's quite, you know, the way they're showing how it could be used, it was kind of, it got you excited, got juices flowing.
No, definitely. And so I thought it was a big tick in the box. It seemed, and it didn't seem too different from what's there just now. So it felt familiar, but it did feel refreshed as well.
Felt like, you know, Google Now felt not like a nice piece of kit on the phone.
Yeah.
And it feels like they flowed out those ideas into all their apps, basically.
Yeah. And the only thing I will say is, like, if anybody ever slags off Apple for one of those condescending adverts again, just take a look at the Material Design PDF. And number one on it is material is a metaphor. A material metaphor is a unifying theory of a rationalized space and a system of motion. A material is grounded in tactile reality, inspired by our study of paper and ink, yet open to imagination and magic. Oh my God.
It's a virtual block that can be squeezed and stretched. It's moved. It's, blah, blah, blah.
It's some pixels.
Yeah.
But it looked very nice set of pixels. Yeah. And there was a consistency that I don't think has been as... I think it's been the best set of consistent design from Google. It looks like they're applying it everywhere. Yeah. They showed you maps. They showed you all their apps kind of skinned that way. And it'll be exciting to see, you know, what they do with things like Gmail and a lot of the web properties.
Yeah. And because this all does flow out into the web, and they you know, they've released the kind of frameworks you need to be able to do this on your own websites if you want to use Material. I can't remember the splimmin' name of this site now, but you can go there and you can actually download the whole app framework, including all the look and feel.
If you just go to google.com/design,
okay, it's got links all
and it's
out.
Got links to it, and it, so that's where I was doing that condescending PDF from. But there's Google guidelines, there's videos, there's archive, there's a whole bit around Google Cast Glass.
I'm just trying to remember what the name of the actual framework was, though, that they talked about. And it doesn't really matter. You'll find everything you want there. So other things they covered in this. We'll skip over the other kind of look and feel things, because I think we've done that to death.
Yeah, and as you said, but it's also applying it to the web. You know, so what they're saying is this isn't just like a set of apps, and you're only going to see it in Android, but they showed you some really nice animation type stuff on the web, and it was all 60 frames per second. It did look really slick.
Yes, it did look slick. Yes, and if people get, you know, can, you know, pull in the power, that'd be great. Personal unlocking was quite an interesting concept. So the idea that if you've got another device, maybe say a phone or something, or sorry, not a phone, if you've got a one of their watches, for example, and your phone senses that watch is next to it, it will unlock your phone with all your preferences there without you having to type in the PIN or whatever. If your phone's not, if your wristwatch moves away from the device, then it will lock. And I think a similar thing on Chromium tablets and stuff like that. So
yes,
quite a clever concept. The concept of devices knowing each other and knowing where they are. And so it kind of can make a stab at knowing that it's you holding that phone rather than someone else. I don't know how that deals with it in a pub.
No.
I think there might be some more fraping going on. Let's have a, where else are we? Sorry, I'm just going down the notes now. Recents. So that was an interesting one. So So this is like on your phone, you could always bring up what you used recently as far as apps go like that. They've now introduced into that web pages as well. And I believe that developers will be able to hook into that API and therefore add a card for them for, you know, that's more useful than just this is an app you've used. It'll be a this is a web page you've visited.
Yeah,
and you can scroll through them in a kind of nice 3D carousel type effect.
It looks quite handy if you were jumping between three or four different things. You know, pop that up, swap to that, pop that up, swap to that. You know, that kind of looked quite sweet.
Yeah, and looking at some of the demos they did a bit later, you could see them doing that kind of, and it looked like it was natural. Obviously, they've designed the demo to do that, but it kind of, where they were switching from one thing to the other, they just popped that up, flicked through, and then found the bit they wanted to get to. So, yeah, it looked good. They've put an underlying new runtime underneath, which is going to give everything faster performance, better garbage collection, things like that, without developers having to do anything effectively. They've tweaked everything, made everything a bit faster effectively. Nothing more to say really on that.
So the next thing was this extension pack. So it was lots more graphic options available to developers as well. So they didn't go too much into gaming at this point. It was a developer conference, so they were more focusing on, you know, some low level APIs and some options that are available. But yeah. Again, look good.
Yep. Security wise, they talked about how users can actually. All apps are now virus checked on the Play Store, and if users give permission, Google can also check apps that are outside of the Play Store for viruses and known threats. And they've got factory reset protection built in as well.
And also, I think so you can remote the security rather than being an actual whole Android update, it's actually getting pushed through Google Play.
I think we've seen that more and more, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's the little incremental things that it knows it can get onto all handsets rather than this one big behemoth of this is an update for a whole system that, you know, you've got to test across all your devices.
It
hasn't worked.
All you need to do is look at the fragmentation graph that Apple pulls up and has a chuckle
every time. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're right, you know, so at least they're addressing it.
But also now we're in the situation where even though the major version isn't necessarily up to date, they could be in a more secure platform if they get this right, because they can release instantaneous patch updates and things like that through the Play Store. So they could end up being a better system. Even if people aren't running the latest versions, they could be still more secure. So they talked about the split down of personal and corporate device data. So they talked about the fact that, you know, users have a work life and a personal life, and they don't like those two things crossing, but they want one phone that can do both things. And underlying, they've built into this new release the ability to split out those two, I guess they're kind of profiles, I guess is the word I'm looking for. But yeah, so work data doesn't get access to home data and vice versa.
And that'll be really interesting to see, because lots of people, I mean, I certainly don't. I've got a work account and nothing else is kind of local to that. But as people have talked before about how you've got, you know, maybe a work Google account and a home Google account, we've got it with the podcast. I mean, I've got multiple Google accounts and they don't play nice with each other.
No, they don't. They wanted you to combine them all together, but sometimes that just wasn't right.
No, and it can get quite messy every so often, and certainly in the browser. It's like, no, YouTube, I don't want to be in this account. And no matter what you do, you just can't get it to pick that up. So hopefully that'll be an end to this. I think Samsung do you remember Knox? They had this whole concept of Knox, and this was their way of saying that's where the kind of corporate world sits within it. But the big thing about Knox was it got certified. So there's many, many of the kind of American government associations.
It's ticking a box, isn't it? So they then feel comfortable. Yeah.
But Samsung have now seemingly donated that to Android, so right, that the whole Android platform gets that.
So, and they kind of summed everything up by saying that the underlying principles behind all these kind of L philosophies were that it's got to be contextually aware, so it's got to know where it is, where you are, where other devices are around it. And where it is in time and space. It's got to be support voice control, and they said so many different applications now of what they want to do. You know, you haven't got a keyboard or hands available, so you've got to be able to have your voice controlled. And it should be seamless across devices, but mobile first. So making sure it's developed for mobile and then extend the functionality onto these other screens.
Mm.
And I think that came across in what they showed and how they showed it working. Then they went on to talk about Android Wear. So they covered before one of the LG, was it the LG Gear phone that got released already? Or is it the one before? I can't remember. I never keep up. It was a Samsung Gear, wasn't
it? Samsung has a Gear out. So they've had two or three Gears out running Tizen and Android.
That's it, yeah. So they showed basically how this new L philosophy kind of works on the wearables, and they gave some good examples of how how the thing was going to work in alongside your phone. So when you install an application on your phone, it will install automatically. If you have a watch, it will install a kind of sub app if that happens to be something that your application defines, and then it can receive notifications, it can interact with that app, and it can show you what's going on. No comment.
No, it just looked like a Pebble. I didn't really see, apart from Pebble's not touchscreen. But
don't you see it as a Pebble that's got more possibility than Pebble could because it's too narrow focus?
No. I was pretty underwhelmed when I saw the Android Wear stuff. I was like, oh.
Okay, fair news. Because it started piquing my interest, let's put it that way.
It certainly looks a stronger platform. I think the hardware helps the fact you can swipe around it and do all that kind of stuff. But
we're going to get bigger and bigger watches then, and it's going to be like eventually you've got the phone on your wrist.
Yeah, I wouldn't order a pizza from my watch. So it's like,
but you can't.
but it's like it almost felt, because the other demos have always showed things like on your watch, you can see that your gate's changed for your flight. And that's, I don't know, Google is obsessed with showing us flight detail changes. Yeah, and it's not just Google. I do feel companies are struggling to justify the whole,
contextual awareness. As far, he gave that example of, every Thursday, you might be ordering a takeaway. So why not have a notification that on Thursday at 6:30, something pings up on your watch because there's an app there that, it knows that you've been doing that every Thursday. So it pops up a notification, say, hey, it's Thursday. You normally order this. Do you want to go for it? Do it. Press a button.
It just don't tick. So see, when I think back to, like iPhone launch and the Android launches in the past, where it's always been like, oh, look at all these great.
Yes, I agree. There's only so much you can do with a bloody watch, isn't there?
Yeah.
But I thought that they were doing was quite clever.
Like the look of the Moto 360. I thought that
everyone did.
Yeah.
Because they came announced and said, this one's out now. This one will be available to order later. And then it was like, and the Moto 360, which everyone wanted, is available later in the year, and everyone went, but later they would have their spirits lifted once more. They've released the SDKs. Is the whole, this is, they've got this L and they're going to release the SDKs. It's up to developers now to sort of move on with it and get it done. So they next up was Android Auto. So this was, how is this new L going to be integrated into your cars? And basically a load of manufacturers have come along and said, yeah, we'll integrate it. You plug your phone into the car and you get a display which is auto-focused. So it's basically voice activated. It's got direct access to your apps. Direct access to your directions and several other bits and bobs.
Yeah.
You weren't overwhelmed by this either.
It's just the same as CarPlay from Apple. And I just don't believe either of them are going to be that popular.
It's kind of like SatNav Plus, isn't it? Everyone's got a SatNav screen in their car, so why not plug it in and have these extra features of your phone? Especially the Siri, I say Siri, the Google Now type feature.
I'm particularly cynical with anything to do with autos and anything to do with TV, because it just feels like every year now they're going to trot out this kind of thing. So I've heard it before. And I didn't see anything different that they were doing that Apple or Microsoft haven't said we can do. I don't think there's anything that they showed that was like...
No, but that full connectivity and the full kind of ability, instead of having to type in a postcode to get... You know, if you imagine it's just a SatNav Plus, instead of having to type in your postcode...
I know, but we've seen it all before.
You just say, take me to there.
There was nothing there. That's what I'm saying. I just looked at it and thought, so yeah, you've designed the UI. Of course you've designed the UI to fit a tablet-type screen in a car. Whoop. You know, like, they spent more time...
We're getting to the multi-screen scenario I talked about a while back, which is one device appears on any screen.
What summed up Android Auto for me is they spent more time showing how they'd taken some power tools to cut down a car than showing an effective demo of Android
then
Auto.
Then put a complete geek in the seat.
who kept on doing the steering wheel?
He should have played on it more. He was stuck halfway between taking the piss completely and being quite serious, and it didn't work.
No, and I think he felt slightly awkward. It was like, I think
would have felt slightly awkward.
Hi world. Yeah. I'm in this pretend car. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's back to the... I've always wanted something smart in the car, and I've always been let down about it. It's the same with CarPlay. I just look at it and go, so you've got 40 manufacturers and nothing's going to come out.
Yeah. So let's see if it does work. They've got people signed up to it at least. So I said directions was one thing that they put front and center, and music is the other. Music and radio.
I think Google have got more of a chance, because I do think their voice works better, the contextual stuff works better, the search works better, and I think that's
their voice that's on really Google strong. Now their voice searching is incredibly clever now,
and you take it for granted, and every so often you just stop and think, hold on, this is doing something really smart, really quickly on a phone, anywhere in the world. This is fantastic.
And I know it was all demo, but you know, they can say, what are the opening times of... They did a museum, didn't they? So there's, what are the opening times of such and such a museum? And it went away and got the opening times for Wednesday. And he said, right, take me there. And then it knew still that you were talking about the museum, and it knew that you wanted to be directed there. And so it fired up the navigation app. And I know it's a demo, and I know obviously it's already checked out, but it knows what you're talking about. That's very clever.
I know it is, but and the big bit for me is I'm just looking at my car just now and thinking, it's not there, because they've got that screen there and there's all these manufacturers. It's all next year's model.
I say, problem is, no one buys a car like they buy a phone. So it's, you know, it's, you don't update your car that often. And if you've only just bought your car, well, you're not going to see these updates for the next 4 or 5 years minimum, probably.
Unless you do some leasing deal and you're getting one every so often.
Yeah, but leasing deal, or if these things are head units that you can interchange and put in after.
Yeah, and that was a problem with CarPlay for me, because it looked like you had to buy the vehicle. And I think it was Pioneer have said they're going to do some sort of aftermarket CarPlay.
But most don't do things like that, and most cars now aren't designed to take. Yeah, the motor cars aren't designed to take their central consoles aren't designed to be taken apart.
No, you're right. Like they're all integrated to stop the thieves,
and to stop the aftermarket of things. Then they went on to talk Android TV and how was this device going to now work for Android TV, and they showed how it could, you know, you could play games on your TV now. They're trying to put an overall Android TV service onto all the things that they've got already, including casting stuff and including all the app stores and stuff like that. So again, just trying to tie the TV in, and they were quite compelling with it, I guess.
I like the search in this one. I like the fact that he said, you know, what was it, Oscar nominees from 2012, and up popped a list of films, and then there was all the kind of... And it's back to your talk about the kind of search side of it. It wasn't just there's the kind of IMDb static actor list. It was, there's some videos from the event, and there's some, you know, there was some really nice information getting surfaced.
Pulled in, yeah.
I liked that, but as I said, following those two together, we're just like, we've seen these three or four times. We've had Google TV.
It felt more solid for me, though. It just felt more real. The problem is, last year's Google I.O., or was it 2 years ago, where they told us a whole ton of stuff that just never existed?
No, well, 2012 was when Schmidt turned around after it and said, by the end of the year, 3/4 of TV sold will have Google TV on it. And it's like, I've not seen one in Britain.
They've not managed to compel anyone yet.
No, well, it's dead. So this is, I guess this is attempt 3 or 4.
Yeah. Okay. My cheesy instincts are saying... I think this feels more solid and it's got more legs.
I think right at the end they said all next year's TVs, so all next year's HD and 4K smart TV ranges from Sony, Sharp, TP Vision and Philips will run on Android TV. That felt like an actual strong statement of intent.
Like they had paid them a lot of money to go and do that, probably.
and the only thing you could turn in and say as well, even though they make good tellies, most of these companies are almost dead. So
yes, the hardware. Yeah. Okay, so then they talked about Chromecast, and they how well they've sold, and they've outsold a load of other people, and they kind of talked just about how they're developing it, really trying to turn it into a social thing, so you. User doesn't have to be on your Wi-Fi network officially to actually get in there. And
I thought it was really clever.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's an opt-in thing, so you get to choose. But now it was all clever. I don't know how they're doing it.
I think it was over 3G, some sort of clever 3G type thing, and you could, because straight away I was like, how do I stop my neighbor from doing that? How do I stop my neighbor casting?
And it's because there's the number that's actually on your screen.
Yeah, you can put a number on to stop it, which is just as well.
Yeah. And they've just talked about how they're going to move it on and how people are more and more people that sort of integrating into it.
Yeah. So they talked about they basically brought a screensaver to it. They called it a backdrop, but it was like you can take a feed of photos and spin through it
instead of having its photos decided for you. You can put your photos up. The other bit, they've updated the kind of screen sharing ability of it, so you can that was always a kind of beta release on the Chromecast that we've both got. Now that looks like they've kind of updated that and made it much more robust, so you can actually show real-time video, things like that.
And you can mirror your Android device, which is a biggie. You know, if you're sitting in that corporate world, you've just got all these plugged into loads of TVs and you can just go share.
Yeah.
That's quite slick.
There you go. Chromebooks. They showed their Chromebooks and, again, how it was all going to be tied together with this sort of release, and how, you know, you can use your Chromebook, like, to get call notifications and to get texts, stuff, if your phone is nearby.
So it's interesting.
The same that we saw at Apple.
Sorry, I didn't want to speak of you. It's interesting, both Apple and Google obviously go in very similar ways and try to join the desktop mobile world and make it more seamless.
Yeah, and it seemed, I guess they could make a demo up that made it look like they'd already been thinking about that before, but you get the impression they were thinking along the same lines, both companies.
I think they've both been heading that way, you know, slightly different directions, but they're both kind of getting there at the same point. And it makes sense. You don't want to... The one I always think about is, it's like you want Twitter just to be synchronized everywhere, and it still baffles me that they're not, you know, and they're relying on third parties like Tweetbot, you know, because that was always that horrible jarring when it first came out of moving from one to another, and you've got, you know, 800 messages to try and find where you were. And to me, it's the same with working. If I'm doing an email and I do want to move through and what's sitting in the telly, why can't I just pick up my phone and continue?
And I think we get into that point, aren't we?
So. Yes. The weird docs. One. No, we're just on. The weird one in this was showing Android apps running in Chrome.
Oh yeah, that was a good point actually. Yes, yeah, so you could run Android apps inside. Yeah.
So I was kind of surprised at first. I was like, where do you? Because remember we've talked before about you've got Chrome OS and you've got Android, and what's happening? You know, are they? There was lots of talk about Android's going to get ditched and Chrome's the future, and you were like, no, it can't be. You know, I don't get that. And this was almost like saying, you know, Chrome is an operating system. We're not getting that traction on apps, so we can now start to run Android apps. And they said it was select ones, but they showed Evernote and Vine running.
Yeah, yeah.
And also accessing the camera on the Chrome device. You know, so it was a full
quick way of expanding out that Chromebook kind of the, you know, attractiveness of it, really.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good. So yeah, docs, they kind of showed that you could now open Word docs natively. You didn't have to actually open them up in the Google Docs editor, so it could actually just deal with Word documents straight off the bat without being imported, and which that's pretty much where I got up to.
I thought that was a real big win, because just being able to open up a Word doc and save the Word doc and make some quick edits on a free tool is like
brilliant. Yeah,
I saw somebody describing it.
And it's like the hardest thing in the world ever to do from a programming point of view, because Word's underlying markup is notoriously rubbish.
I mean, somebody described it as I've turned Office into an API, as in Microsoft Office. You know, it was like, it's just fire it up. And it was also the fact, save it back native, or you can save it to a Google Doc if you wanted to.
Yeah. So good.
So do you want me to rattle through these couple?
Yeah, what did they go through? So Google Play was next.
Google Play was a kind of, it was a mishmash of a number of things. And so they've bought this company called Appurify, which is all about testing services, testing, you know, net worth, bandwidth, testing your app on a, you know, an edge connection or a 3G connection where you're usually sitting in a 4G or Wi-Fi world. This company's been going for a while and it's been used on iOS and Android. But what they're saying is they are going to, that they're not shuttering the iOS part of it. So that's going to get kept going as well. And again, it looked really smart. They talked about new game profiles and better way to save games in the cloud. So again, it's almost like they were touching on, because we kind of skipped it. Android TV has games, and I did wonder, is this cloud sharing, you know, have a game running on the Android TV, have it running on your tablet, have it running on your phone, and it's consistent throughout. And they also talked about this concept of quests. So I can set, a developer can set up a quest in a game, or I could set up a quest almost as a challenge to you. So if we're playing a game and I'd done some sort of high score on it, I can say, Chris, here's the quest to go and beat this high score, and you've got some sort of time-limited quest. It's all about weak sauce, really.
It's trying to get people in, you know, go and download this app to go and complete this quest.
Yeah, another noticeable bit, there's quite a lot inside Google Play, and I've totally skipped out, by the way, the really boring cloud scripting nonsense that they went on for about 20 minutes. It's just like, geez, this was 2 hours and 20 minutes in, and they decided to go and start coding up, doing some querying on Twitter data. It was like, yeah, great. Google Fit Platform, again, I'm not, when I'm saying these things very similar to Apple, I'm not saying either one is ahead, because they've both done some keynotes and stuff that's coming out later this year. So that, yep. I don't think anybody's ahead, but very similar strategy to Apple. A Fit Platform, so it kind of pulls together all these different fitness streams in one place. So I think recognizing, like, right now they've not got anything in this game, the same as Apple, but there's obviously loads of devices out there and loads of different applications and loads of different measurements. So have a Fit Platform to pull it all together so you can see a picture of yourself. The interesting bit, Adidas and Nike are taking part, and Nike's actually opened up its fuel number for other Fitstream apps, which was a fairly big one. Yeah. So SDK will be on in a few weeks. I think that was the only noticeable thing. Everything in here was weeks, months away. It felt early.
They're talking about a release, but didn't they say that they're just trying to get things out by the end of the year, though?
Yeah, I think the L preview is coming out today, because I've seen a lot of people saying, come on, Google, release it now. So I think that is coming out today, but a lot of the other stuff was all pretty much later this year, fall.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we remember this is a developer conference, and Google tend to use it as a developer conference. The Skydivers were probably a bit of a departure from that, because that was a bit of, you know, titillation, if you like. But this, they do use it like a developer conference. And, it's, you know, they're trying to let developers know what's coming up more than really pander to end users. They don't really so much have an end user conference, do they?
No. So the important bit that we're probably not touched on is freebies. Did you see the freebies?
No.
So Google, we've always chuckled about how they all go mad for, like, the Nexus Q that's sitting under their chair or whatever, and their tablets and all that. And this year they got a box of cardboard. Sundar Pichai held up, he says, we're all getting cardboard. And there was this hashtag cardboard. And what this basically is one of these 20% time projects that the developers have done, and you unfold it. And it basically turns a phone into an Oculus Rift. So it's got a set of eyeglasses and it's got a little magnet piece of metal at the side, which basically acts as a switch. And you can go to developers.google.com/cardboard. You can make your own, and it tells you how to make your own with all the bits and pieces that you need to go and buy. Or if you get one of the cardboard sets from Google I.O. So I saw somebody calling it an Oculus Thrift, which I thought was quite funny. But they also then said, because people were like, what? I've spent all this money on on a bit of cardboard. But they also, you can choose between a G Watch or a Gear Live. So an LG Watch or a Samsung Gear Live. And people were like, whoop, whoop. And then they says, and also, when the Moto 360 is out, you'll get one as well. And everybody was like, yeah!
Because that's the one they wanted earlier. That's yeah. Right. Yeah, that's them.
Right.
If you go to developers.google, did you say this already? developers.google.com/cardboard, you'll see exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've kind of picked out two things notable by their complete and utter absence from this I.O.
And there's maybe more. It's because...
These are the two most notable.
Google are fairly good at shuttering stuff that they don't think's working. But Google Plus, I never saw mentioned once.
Nope.
There was no... And even today, I've just seen a thing saying that that within the Google search results, you usually got Google author profiles linking to the Google Plus page. The photos are disappearing. The links are still there, but all that's starting to get unpicked now. And Google Glass, not one Google person was wearing. There's a horrible picture of like five or six guys. And did you see it? The guy with the red hair and stuff.
We're really cool, man. Yeah. We're wearing a Google Glass.
Yeah. So yeah. And it was the angle they were taking to take pictures of people.
Just look like complete knobbers. I have to say, if you're wearing Google Glass, maybe a bit like when I said you look like a knobber if you're carrying a tablet, and that's just now everyday normal. Maybe one day wearing Google Glass will be everyday normal, but at the moment you look like a knobber.
I will admit I have now taken pictures with my iPad because it was all I had handy, and I thought, well,
it happens. It happens. It's the ever-marching social decline.
I aged about 5 years. What did you think?
I thought, from a development point of view, it got me interested. I liked the design philosophy of it. I liked how tied together it all looked. I liked the fact that now they've got one underlying SDK that is designed to flow out onto all these different devices and areas. So, again, it's kind of... it's agnostic as to the screen that you're going on. It's kind of puts apps and delivery of information and data, and it sort of separates that from the screen it's being developed on, being shown on, and it will react to that different screen area. So I thought it was clever, and I think it's the future.
What you said?
Yeah.
No, I thought it was really strong. I just wish they'd focus a bit more on. How they present some of this stuff, like
yeah, I think full stop. You could have ended your sentence there. I wish they'd focused a bit more.
Yeah,
you know, that's it, really.
I just think some of this is turning into a yearly. It feels a bit Microsofty, and remember Microsoft at CES had to do this. Here's a tablet, and we're bringing it out, and here's a slate, we're bringing it out, and here's a home device, we're bringing it out, and here's this, we're bringing it out, and here's what we're doing in the car. It feels like particularly Google more than anybody else at the moment is trying to tick all those boxes. And sometimes I think the products aren't as strong and it's not worth showing. I would rather they said, you know, it's not ready yet.
No, fair enough.
Because some of the demos I thought were really great and others I thought were really awful.
I guess the problem is they're so far reaching and far and wide with what they do that it's hard to focus down on just a couple of the bits, because especially when they were trying to show how everything ties together. But yeah, I get you, and I think that's a fair criticism. We've also had some other news coming out, so... that was a kind of keynote speech, but they've also opened up their Gmail to have an underlying SDK that developers can hook into and integrate into kind of your Google Mail offering.
Yeah, so a Gmail API. This could be really big because your email is still, you're probably the same for all our attempts to get stuff into applications and out of mail. It's still so much happens within email. So this is almost like a recognition of that, and they're trying to then allow, you know, third party apps to pop in and take advantage of the data in there.
Yeah, I mean, for me, email is still my to do list. It's my inbox. It's my social calendar. It's my, you know, it's all those kind of different things. It's all done via email, even though we know it's inefficient. We know it's not ideal, and it's probably the worst way to keep data, really.
Mm.
Google Nest has bought Dropcam.
So yeah, Dropcam is like a home monitoring system. I think it's more popular in America, and it's one of these ones. It was one that's quite smart, tied up with your iPhone and your Android tablets and alerts you to things. And and you could watch it remotely and infrared and do all that kind of stuff.
A fly has moved into your lounge.
Pretty much.
Would you...
and
then they just need laser beam one on their nests, and then they can have, would you like me to zap it? Great.
It was like the drone, anyway, sorry, the drone with the pepper spray. It was like, oh, fantastic. So yeah, Google, and it's interesting. They've basically, they're not saying that Google's bought it and so on. It's Google's Nest. So they're really trying to stick with this Nest brand. And the thing about this is that now Google's in your house, so now they'll be able to monitor you. That's the scary. That's all the geek, especially on the Apple side of things. Are like the amount of tweets that I saw that said, "Thank goodness I didn't buy a drop cam," and it's like, come on, it's not.
It's just that's such an obvious response as well. I kind of want to live in this house. I love the idea of this full-on automation house.
So do I. I just think it's really, really smart that I can, you know, and what Apple did there. Kind of HomeKit stuff, and we'll talk about it in a minute about what Nest are doing as well with this side of things. We've talked about smart homes and they're coming.
Yeah,
it's coming.
For years you've been able to buy home security cameras, and they were supposedly, you know, they were supposed, you could watch them over the internet and everything, and it just didn't really work very well. It wasn't good, it wasn't efficient, and it never caught on. You just know that with this kind of overarching philosophy, everything will just work, and you'll have a home hub that you can log into from anywhere around the world, and you'll be able to properly view your home and do whatever. It's just, I love it.
Yep, and Dropcam were trying to branch out into that because they were saying it's not just a hardware company. They were saying $99 a year, we'll host your kind of videos online, and you can log into your kind of video archive and all that kind of good stuff. So they were trying to do something a bit more than just with a camera and you can watch us remotely. And at the same time as Google Nest and buying Dropcam, they then launched their equivalent of HomeKit. So HomeKit was this Apple idea of there's a kind of framework and we'll let all these different home devices plug in. And basically Nest has now got a developer program. They're now saying you can now work with a variety of different products, and we've got some examples here. So there's like a garage door system, so that if your garage door opens or closed depending on what you want to do, then you can set the away mode in your thermostat, because the assumption is you went to the garage because you're heading out. If this then that can be hooked in, which is massive because so many different triggers can come from if this then that. Job on fitness, so if you're going to bed or waking up because the job on fitness can detect that, then you can automatically set your thermostat to turn on or turn off, depending on whether you're going to sleep.
They talk about the kind of knowledge cloud, don't they, about how they kind of work out how they know what they're talking about. And it's because they kind of have this underlying metadata that understands. And these when they talk about these HomeKit ideas or the Nest equivalent, it's kind of just giving that metadata to a new area, which is your home and your life. So that it kind of makes those assumptions. It says, you know, if you've just got into your car and driven away and it knows that the rest of your family aren't in the house, then shut everything down to, you know, lock down, make sure the doors are locked, make sure the garage is locked, make sure the thermostat's not on, you know, heating or whatever. And it starts getting very clever because you can start, say, attaching that metadata in all sorts of different ways, you know, getting ready for when you normally come home, get the house ready straight away. And so that's kind of what these APIs are and these kind of frameworks they're talking about. It's giving metadata to your everyday life and your
absolutely.
And the bits and bobs inside it.
The one example they put in was Whirlpool. So if you've got an intelligent, some of the Whirlpool devices coming out now are very energy sensitive. And what they were talking about was link it through your Nest, and it'll work out when is the best slot to go and do your washing based on when is the cheapest time to run it during the day or night. And again, it's just taking the decision away from you, doing it all intelligently and hopefully delivering you a saving back. So really, really smart. And this is the thing, when Google bought Nest, and lots of people are like, they just bought a thermostat company, they just bought a smoke detector. And it's like, no, they're buying a home platform. And yes, some people were like, oh my God, Google's in my house. But then I'm like, oh my God, Google's in my house. What an opportunity. You know, I'm looking at the opportunity side, not about the kind of big scary, they'll know everything about me. They probably do anyway. You know, Facebook does, you know, and it's one of these
Everyone
things.
Everyone does. That's the whole point. It's all stored away in a nice database somewhere, just ready for some sweaty oik to go and look at it all.
When the bot Nest talked about sharing data and how they wouldn't be sharing data with Google, but they did confirm that Google will now connect some of its apps to Nest, which will now allow Google to know when Nest users are home or not. So some people are seeing this as a total cop-out because you said you'd never share data. But they're just seeing Google as another company that can plug it in. So Microsoft could write an app to plug into Nest, as Apple could, and know the same data.
Right. And at the end of the day, people, to do it properly, they're going to have to go in whole hog, and you'll get a better product out of it if they don't give themselves these sort of artificial restrictions. But we'll see. We'll see. Apple iPhone kill switch has been proved to cut thefts enough that Microsoft and Google are going to follow suit, basically.
Yeah, which is all good. So statistics from London and San Francisco shows that thefts of iPhones have really dropped off, and that's at the same time as actual iPhone sales and number of units have gone up. Whereas they looked at some of the popular, you know, Android devices, so your Samsungs, and I was going to say something else, but it's just Samsung.
it's kind of like, you know, immobilizers in modern cars, and better systems mean that it's, you know, there's no point breaking into this car because you're not going to be able to drive off with it. And I think there's also a bit of, you know, one point a smartphone was a relatively uncommon thing to see, and nowadays it's more of a common thing to see, so they're probably becoming less attractive in that sense. But nevertheless, having effectively this equivalent of a car immobilizer in your phone is putting people off the effort and the bother of doing it.
It sounds great, and as I said, the sooner everybody has that option, the better.
So we mentioned that Google Glass wasn't mentioned in I/O, but we did. I think it was last week we had that released in the UK. You can go buy one now for £1,000. Meant as a sort, it's still on the developer preview, but you as a person can go and buy it if you want to.
I'd rather buy a spoon for £1,000 and gorge myself with it. Would you buy a Google Glass for £1,000?
Not £1,000.
Would you buy it for £100?
Yeah, probably. Bought a, you know, Chromecast, which I haven't really used very much.
Was £25.
I know. I think £100 would interest me. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. As much as anything, out of curiosity.
Would you wear it outside?
No, probably not. And I'd even be a bit embarrassed about wearing it indoors. But again, like I say, those things change. They change quick. But there you go.
It just feels.
You know what? It feels like it's not their golden child anymore. They're more interested in, you know, these self-driving cars and stuff. It was exciting at one point, but now they're realizing that a watch and a phone in your pocket is actually just as comprehensive, really, as having something straight up in front of your eyes and a bit more socially acceptable.
2 years since that keynote where they all came in on their parachutes. And
I think they've realized, like I say, they could do it in other ways.
Yeah.
You don't have to look like a knob when you're doing it. And I think they have been probably a bit shocked by how socially unacceptable it is considered to be.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Withings, they have stuck one of their fitness trackers in an analog watch.
Have you seen this watch?
No.
Click on the link.
I will do. Doing it now.
So this is...
Here's my live action reaction.
That is, yeah.
Got a slow loading website. It's all right.
So it looks like a watch.
Yeah.
And it has...
With a weird dial on it.
Yeah. And that weird dial probably basically tells you how fit you've been.
So it goes from 0 to 100%. And I guess if you get to 100, then you've done a good job today.
Yeah. $390.
Yeah, it's too much.
So when I looked at that, it was like...
Way too much.
Yeah, because it looks like...
I mean, it's a nice watch, but it's not £350 nice.
But it looked like a $150 watch. You know, if you're going to go and try and value them and put them all in a row, that wouldn't be up at $400 for me.
No.
But it did it in a way that is unobtrusive compared to a lot of the other ones. But if you compare it to a Fitbit, or you compare it to the Up, where it just looks like a lump of plastic around your wrist at least.
Yeah, they're kind of just saying you combine the two together... and you know, save on buying two separate things, but yeah, it's, you know, I think they'll get people to buy it. I just don't think it'll be that many people.
No.
Microsoft has doubled the free OneDrive storage that you get. And I think they're also lowering the price of their kind of extended drive space offerings, so their cloud storage. We thought, you know, Amazon and Google were really sort of fighting over it. Now Microsoft has decided they're going to really put the cat amongst the pigeons.
15 gig for free. It's not to be sniffed at.
That's an awful lot of data, yeah.
You know, so 15 gig in the cloud for free, which is the same as Google. And it starts to make Dropbox's 2 gig look a bit paltry.
Yeah, you have to, for Dropbox to make sense, you have to do a subscription.
Yeah.
But the thing is, as Dropbox are that kind of one, you know, one product company, they can't afford, they don't have all this storage to give away for free, you know, basically.
And I think the Office 365 subscriptions now come with a terabyte. But we've seen before, I mean, Flickr moved to a terabyte and it didn't substantially boost Flickr and it didn't kill Yahoo. I thought most people will use 5 gig.
Exactly.
You know,
that's about how much people end up using it.
Yeah. But still, yeah. I thought for a free account, you know, to be offering 15 gig, well, for a lot of people, see, even if you don't have a lot of backup in the cloud, a lot of people's documents, you know, 90% of people around the world will not have 15 gig of documents. Get one of these free accounts, stick it in there, and you know, it's backed up somewhere.
I wonder if Dropbox will cleverly start using free accounts from these other companies to underline their service. Because they're affected. Dropbox is only, I believe I'm right in saying it's on Amazon's infrastructure.
Yes.
And on their kind of, their, you know, bucket storage that they've got. So, yeah, maybe they'll just start hooking in these free accounts. Be clever, clever design philosophy. Anyway, there we go. And finally, we're going to end our news with the fact that singles charts, the official single charts, are now going to include streaming services. So up to now, well, it used to be only physical sales. Then they included online downloads. And now they're going to also include streaming listens, I guess.
Yes, every 100 streams counts as one listen or one single purchase.
Yeah, so they still try and make it so that it's worthwhile people purchasing, basically. But it's just them trying to hold on to an old infrastructure, isn't it? And, well, I guess they're also trying to hold on to jobs and all the things that go along with it.
Yeah, so, and they're doing it from a range of, so basically it's all the paid streaming services. So Spotify, Deezer, which doesn't really mean much to me, Napster.
It's used across a lot of the music industry.
O2 Tracks, Music Unlimited, Rara, and Xbox Music.
So basically anywhere where someone has to pay to use it, they're saying that they've paid their money and they've listened to it, and therefore we it's a metric we want to capture.
And at first I was like, that's actually going to radically change the charts. But then when I saw the bit that says 100 to 1, I thought, okay. So that's going to make it slightly harder to dent. But it'll be interesting to see if it does fluctuate.
Downloads
more.
Adjusted the charts just because it suddenly meant that old songs came back into the charts.
Yeah, because you had all the what do you call it, X Factors, and you know when a song was featured one week, all of a sudden
it just pinged back into the charts.
Yeah.
And I guess that it means it's more relevant to actually what people are listening to.
Yeah.
But the singles are kind of irrelevant in today's. I think they know that, but. You know, I'm surprised people buy it at all, really.
Yeah, I know. I can't remember the last time I've bought a single.
I think I only ever bought one, and I think it was, what was it? Blur Country House, I think. Okay. There we go. Welcome to my world. That is the end of the podcast. Google Fest, I think we'll call it today.
It was, because they did what? In some ways what Apple had done before, loads of and like, remember before E3 Microsoft did it, loads of stories beforehand, and you're thinking what they're going to show, and it's like, oh, because you had all that like splurge.
Yeah, and it was a splurge. I mean, that's, like I say, got my juices flowing enough, actually made me quite interested, and some of the sort of developer toolkits they're releasing, especially for the web, are going to be interesting. So watch this space. Anyway, if you want to find out more about what we do and who we are, digitaloutbox.com, and you can talk to us. info@digitaloutbox.com is email, and then we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. You can find me Twitter, CheesyUK, and also if you want to follow my racing, it's academyracer.co.uk. Ian?
My blog is iand.net. I am on Twitter as Shweepa.
Good stuff. So thanks for getting this far, and we will talk to you again next week. Goodbye.
Ta-ra. pretty confident now we'll have a podcast about September, because I'm always convinced that, see, after all the big keynotes, it's nothing. That's it.
It's a bit, we're into the dearth of nothing phase, aren't we? Basically? Dearth is the word I was looking for then, not dearth.
Dearth.
We have got no content.
Your Muttley was far better.